Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. Saturday morning, 11th of April, and there's quite a lot happening today that I think is worth your time. Three threads running through everything this morning. The discipline required to make AI systems actually work in production. Real quantum computing progress solving actual problems. And infrastructure choices that let companies operate at scale without breaking the bank. Let's start with the AI one. Because this properly surprised me. Someone built a tutorial for creating a secure GitHub PR reviewer using Claude. And what's fascinating isn't that they built it, it's how they built it, because they treated Claude like you'd treat any external system you don't fully trust. The diff itself is untrusted input, which makes sense when you think about it. A developer could hide prompt injection attacks inside code comments, so before anything goes to Claude, the system strips out secrets, validates the structure, and sets hard token limits to control costs. But here's where it gets interesting. The real intelligence comes from Claude, right? The model does the code review. But the reliability, the bit that makes this actually work in production, that comes from everything around the model. Separate input sanitization, a system prompt designed to resist manipulation, ZOD validation checking Claude's JSON response against a strict schema, and error handling that assumes the model might return complete garbage, because it might. The pattern here is what I keep seeing across production AI systems now. The model is one component, and if you don't engineer the rest carefully, it's actually the weakest component. You need to fail safely when things break. You need to validate outputs. You need to treat AI-generated content the same way you treat user-generated content, as potentially hostile. This isn't theoretical caution. This is the difference between a system that mostly works and one that actually works when someone's trying to break it. The takeaway? AI isn't replacing engineering. It's a tool that demands better engineering. Worth thinking about if you're building anything with LLMs right now. Right. Completely different corner now, but stay with me. Pascal just solved differential equations at the logical qubit level. And if you're not deep in quantum computing, that might sound like noise, but this is actually huge. Logical qubits are error corrected, which means they're reliable enough to do useful computation. That's the threshold. That's the line between quantum as a laboratory curiosity and quantum as something that could solve problems classical computers struggle with. Differential equations show up everywhere. Physics simulations, fluid dynamics, financial modeling, anything involving rates of change over time, and solving them efficiently on quantum hardware. With error correction working properly, that's not a marketing milestone, that's real progress. Meanwhile, Spink Technology raised nearly 1 billion yuan in Series C funding in 3 months. That's about $138 million US, and it came in two tranches because investors were queuing up. The quantum computing industry is getting serious money behind it now. And then IonQ dropped a workforce report predicting an 850,000 worker gap in quantum computing by 2036. Universities can't produce trained professionals fast enough to meet demand, which tells you something about where this industry thinks it's heading. What I keep coming back to is this. Quantum isn't theory anymore. The money is real, the problems being solved are real, and the talent shortage is starting to show. If you're early in your career and you're deciding what to specialize in, this might be worth a look. Okay, so this next one is less cheerful, but it matters. There's a legal case against OpenAI right now. A stalking victim is suing, claiming ChatGPT fueled her abuser's delusions. The allegations are that OpenAI ignored multiple warnings, including its own internal mass casualty flag, while this user harassed his ex-girlfriend using ChatGPT to generate communications. And here's the thing. This isn't about whether the AI created the harassment, it clearly didn't, the person did. But the question being raised is, what responsibility does OpenAI have when they're warned that their tool is being used this way? The case alleges they had internal flags showing this was dangerous, and they didn't act. I don't know how this plays out legally, but I do know this is forcing a conversation the industry has been avoiding. When your tool amplifies harm, and you know it's happening, what's your obligation? That's not a technical question, it's an ethical one, and it's not going away. Right. Let me lighten things up a bit. Cloudflare just crossed 500 terabits per second of network capacity, which is, honestly, I had to sit with that number for a minute, 500 TBPs. To put that in perspective, they handled a 31.4 terabits per second DDoS attack recently, automatically. No human intervention, their edge network just absorbed it and kept running. What's interesting isn't just the scale, it's the distribution. Cloudflare's been scaling their network for 16 years now, adding capacity at the edge rather than centralizing everything. So when a massive attack hits, it gets spread across thousands of locations instead of overwhelming a few data centers. This is infrastructure design that assumes attacks will happen and plans for them, for anyone running services that need to stay online. This is the model. You can't prevent attacks, but you can architect systems that absorb them without falling over. And then there's this AWS Lambda update that I think a lot of people will miss, but it's actually quite clever. Lambda-managed instances now support up to 32 gigabytes of memory, and they're 33% cheaper for predictable workloads, which doesn't sound significant until you think about what it enables. In-memory analytics, machine learning inference, data processing that used to require spinning up EC2 instances or managing Kubernetes clusters. Now you can do it in Lambda, with lower costs, and you don't have to think about infrastructure. This is the serverless promise finally catching up to memory-intensive workloads. You still pay for what you use, but the ceiling just got a lot higher. The shift here is subtle but important. Managed services are eating more and more of the infrastructure stack, which means fewer decisions developers have to make and fewer things that can break. Last one, and this is practical if you're building mobile apps with AI features. There's a guide out now for running LLMs locally on Flutter devices. No API tokens, no per request costs, user data never leaves the device. They're using quantized open source models with tflight_flutter, which means smaller models that run efficiently on phones. The guide includes real code and actual debugging gotchas, the stuff you only learn by building it. What this really means is that privacy-sensitive applications just got a lot more viable. Medical apps, financial tools, anything where you can't send user data to a third party. You can now run a capable language model on the device itself. The models are smaller, sure. They're not GPT-4, but for a lot of use cases, they're good enough. And good enough with zero API costs and full privacy is better than perfect with a dollar per user burn rate. So, stepping back from all of that, here's what I keep coming back to. The boring stuff is winning: secure engineering around AI, distributed infrastructure that absorbs attacks, managed services that just work, local models that don't phone home. None of that is flashy. But it's what actually scales. It's what survives contact with users. It's what still works when something goes wrong. The hype cycle moves fast. The discipline of building things properly moves slower. But it's the discipline that lasts. Something to think about on the weekend. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Links in the show notes.